Do tell me about your drawing room meeting, Lady Bottom.
Well, I remember that I was a small child. I don't remember much about it, except, well, disposed ladies used to gather here and agitate for the vote. I don't know what they did. I suppose they passed resolutions and sent them to their MPs and things like that. But we said that they were quite widespread. It was a widespread form of middle class propaganda at the time. And Mama, I don't know if Mama addressed meetings.
This was at Cambridge, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was at Cambridge. I think she may well have done. I don't really know. I think she may well have done. I've never heard her speak in public.
But Lady Mrs. Rackham was very kind.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Rackham, of course. Oh, yes, yes, I knew her quite well. She was one of the early magistrates in Cambridge.
Did you really?
Yes.
I see, I've spoken to her two nieces, Mrs. Table. And I think Mrs. Rackham is a very interesting woman.
Very interesting.
Very incisive. Right? Yes. Very good committee. Yes. Very well briefed and that sort of thing. Did you, were you actually influenced by Mrs. Rackham?
I wouldn't have said so. No, I didn't know her that well. But I mean, she was one in the circle my mother knew.
Was she? Mm-hmm. I hadn't realised that, actually. I really ought to have known that your mother was involved.
Well, you see, my mother was an academic in her own right, as well as being the widow of my father, who was also a Don. So, I was born and brought up in an academic atmosphere, on both sides, as it were.
Because it is the Cambridge academic atmosphere is one of the atmospheres from which woman suffrage and the suffragist tradition really gets.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Does that fit in with other aspects of your mother's life, really? I mean,
she was a hand-dry conservative, became more so as the years went by. She never had, I think, a progressive idea other women. Conservative in relation to everything else.
Mm. How do you fit in her suffrage to that then? Because to be suffrage is really rather a radical thing.
Well, I wouldn't like to say it was perhaps the one cause in which she had personal interest.
Yes. Anyway, she sort of addressed.
Yes, and she was one of the women who took a Trinity College Dublin degree. Did you know about that?
Yes.
If you couldn't, before you were allowed it. She did that about the time my father died because she had an idea that she would need to do some teaching and it would be useful to be able to put the lessons after her name, you see. So she went to the Trinity MA before she could. She never took the Cambridge one, I don't think. Wouldn't be sure. But she didn't. She wasn't the kind of active conservative that you'd recognize. She never bought whiskey there. Did it so often that I was JP before I could vote.
Were you really? I didn't actually know that.
Yes. I sat in judgment on my fellows before I was able to vote.
There were quite a lot of MPs, weren't there? Women MPs before the vote was actually conceded to women under 30.
Quite a
lot. Be an MP before you could actually vote.
Quite a lot. Was there after that?
Yes. I say quite a lot. Several before 1928 who were under 30. Three, four, five, something like
were
that.
There?
I think so, yes.
Presumably all right.
A lot of people argued how absurd it was that people were deprived of the vote but they could stand for Parliament.
No, I really never realised that. I wasn't very politically interested,
I suppose. Another person who interests me a lot, actually, who I'm sure you'll remember, is Eva Habermas.
Oh, yes.
Because you must have done a handover to her.
I did a handover to her at Maury College, yes.
I went to see her children. I've seen all three of her children, all of whom are still alive. And I was wondering, Claire, really, how she struck you when she came to take over from you.
I think she had a different approach. I'll find it difficult to describe how different. She was very lively, very vital person. She didn't have the problems to cope with that I had because I'd cleared the place out.
Yes, well, I got that impression from you.
I thanked half the staff.
Yes, yes.
Well, things one does at that age and one can do now, but
yes.
They were all part-timers, you see, it wasn't as bad as actually. And we had got really quite a reasonable show going. I think she kept the place going and built it up very well.
Well, I get the impression that presumably you claim.
I certainly ran into considerable obstacles. I may have mentioned, I think I did mention that there was a gentleman who attended the elementary bottom of the class for 17 years in succession, which was taken by the same teacher. And I couldn't find any likely romantic reason for it, which is the only reason I could think of. Now tell me, what area does this book cover?
Well, you see, what I'm interested in is what actually happened after enfranchisement and the light that sheds on what happened before enfranchisement. And Eva Hubbard was, as you know, a very shrewd political operator.
She was.
And it seems to
she
me...
She was very much also, you must have read this in your book, she was very much also aware of her racial origins and recruited such like people. I mean, that's a good one, she pointed, was Jewish.
Were they really? Yes. She moved very much in Jewish circles.
Yes, she did, and I suppose it was natural because there were some people she knew.
Yes. But if you talk about the distinction between suffragists and suffragettes, it seems to me she's the vindication of the suffragists in a way, because she knows how to get things done.
My mother was bitter about the suffragettes. She felt they were throwing back the cause, and I can remember her coming in and saying, "Oh, they've done it again. They've set fire to the house and store as well."
Terrible, yes.
Very bitter.
Yes.
But of course, it's arguable that they didn't hold back the cause.
Well, it is a matter for argument.
It's a matter for argument.
I quite agree. Though the BBC, as you say, tends to write now as though it's open and shut.
Nobody has heard the word except you, as far as I can see.
But it seems to me, you see, that the suffragists, on the whole, know how to get things done in politics, whereas the suffragettes don't. And so you don't hear much of the suffragettes after enfranchisement, whereas
it's a great deal. No, because after all, their justification, as they would themselves have said, had gone. I mean, they were rather like the Africans in South Africa. If you have no political rights, perhaps you're entitled to say that.
Yes, well...
When you've got proper channels, you must use them.
That's the point. But, you know, it seems to me that the suffragists trained themselves up in how to affect politics, how to do things.
Yes.
And so they could carry on afterwards. Whereas Pankhurst and people like her don't really ever try to find out how things work. I mean, in a sense, you can understand why they didn't. Because
they
really...
They told they were.
Yes, absolutely. But
I think it was a very curious love for a long time.
Well, this is another thing why I think it's rather important to try and investigate what happened afterwards. Yes. I mean, why do you think there is a love?
I've no idea. I suppose that so much attention had been focused on the vote that having got it, people felt like Pankhurst and Co. that we had won. It was only gradually you began to realise the enormous handicap it is in jobs.
Yes.
Just beginning to break.
Yes. I think there's a lot in that, but don't you think also that after enfranchisement there are a number of issues, class issues and international relations issues, which fill the air and distract people from concern with women's issues?
Remember that the women's movement, certainly the legitimate movement, the suffragist movement, was entirely for class.
Yes.
And the real problems, even for the middle classes, didn't begin to arise. Well, people didn't realise them immediately. I mean, the real problems are you've broken everything. How do you manage with a young family? They all had servants.
Yes. Well, the whole thing's built on servants.
The whole thing's built on that.
Yes.
When we got in the epoch when there were not servants, then you began to get the real conflicts for the women.
Yes, I quite agree.
You also get the... for not having hit, who say, having cashed in on everything that we opened, we did. Of course, I'm not a feminist, but
I like to do this job.
From that point of view.
On the other hand, you've never been restricted, really, by being a woman.
Oh, what is?
Have you really?
It's a tremendous handicap for private jobs. It's true that I've got most of the jobs I've applied for, but twice now.
So you think that may be partly because...
Well, sure, it's partly because... And look at the things like strange academic labyrinths after all my world, how where the hieroglyphs go, even when they were open, the book of there being there, 3,000 or 8,000 professors that finish today,
and
60 or 80 women.
Well, that's true. On the other hand, if you've really got brains, to put it crudely, it doesn't hold you back, does it?
But it does. I don't think having brains get all this kind of jobs. The thing that gets me jobs is having changed my name from A to W.
Can you explain?
If your name is A, like yours, and when you are interviewed, you will go in first. And all interviews will be fresh and go for you. And you won't have any previous experience of what they're like. And when you come out, if you are nice and friendly as you are, you will say to the other shivering candidates in the waiting room, there's no book at the end. And there's a rather nice book here, and so on, and tell me how to play. I've always said that this is a tremendous advantage in getting jobs.
Yes. Did you actually, have you ever really seen yourself as, in a sense, campaigning for women as well as yourself, in a sense? I mean, and when you applied for jobs, have you ever felt that you're a sort of pioneer in a sense?
Yes, I mean, sometimes I think women, I mean, I was called things to come here to really prove of this place. But as I have frequently said, if it exists, I didn't wish it to be entirely full of male Tory Christians. I've said this in public.
So I agree. I mean, in a way, you see, I mean, you wrote, I think it was the sixth chapter of your autobiography about women's opportunities and so on, and you wrote it in a very abstract way, not really relating to yourself at all. And very interesting as that was, I wondered whether you really felt you belonged in the women's movement at all.
Oh, I do. I mean, one of the things I think is not important, but it's hardest to take, is the jokes that you can make. And the comments that you can make. Next time Lord Mancroft never speaks on any questions, I'd say something that's all. Next time he says, as he said the time before last, they talk about drivers. Oh yes, women drivers are very good, but I wish they didn't always drive on the right. Now you see, that's a joke.
Yes.
Next time he says that, I'm going to say, I wish Tory peers didn't always smoke in the chamber.
Yes, yes. I think actually those women driver jokes have died out.
They are dying out, but the BBC had a whack of them within months.
Did they?
Oh, yes. On a nationwide.
Yes, yes. I remember one used to hear those jokes quite commonly.
The other things that are infuriating are the interviews with the woman football referee, the woman foreman. What do the men up, do you think? What I often point out about this is that you can say things about women you can't say about men.
Yes.
You couldn't say that to a black foreman.
Yes, yes, I see that point.
One deals with subtle discriminations of that sort. Now, there was a anaesthetist some time ago, a few months ago, who made a mistake and somebody died. And certainly one of the papers, I think it was the Telegraph, said the woman anaesthetist had put the wrong screw in or something. No need to have mentioned the sex at all.
Yes.
You couldn't have said the
public. Yes, I understand. Yeah, that's quite true. On the other hand, I mean, there are two ways, really, of campaigning for women. Getting jobs and moving up professionally.
It's not for me to complain there.
Articulately complaining about women's position and taking pressure groups of position. I mean, you've taken the first of those two.
I may have taken the first. I mean, I've just gone around.
Yes.
But perhaps that's selfish.
I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying that is, there are two groups, really. I wonder whether you, to some extent...
Well, being one of the things I've most campaigned for, I mean, incidentally, time to time, I have.
Yeah.
And I have done, quite often, I have tried to draw this contrast between women and coloured people, because they're much the same drawbacks. I mean, if you apply for a job and sign your name in a way that doesn't give you away, and you're well qualified, you'll be called for interviews.
Yeah.
And if you have either a coloured face or you wear a skirt, you start with an enormous, for most jobs, an enormous handicap.
Yes.
And I did once, I can't remember, but some new... It might have been right at the beginning of the sex discrimination bill, or I think it was even before the sex discrimination bill, some measure affecting women was being introduced. It might have must have been before, because it was under the Tory government. And the minister made an extremely patronising, fruitful speech saying how we must remember that women could be our intellectual equals, and so on and so forth. And I made the speech in reply, which I just translated the whole of it into colour, just to show.
That's very interesting. Yes.
But it is.
Yes.
There are many little subtleties. I mean, if you do anything well, you get unnecessary applause.
Yes, yes, I can see
you're
that.
You're always a little bit of a performing dog.
Yes, yes. That must decline gradually, but still
it's just vanished, yes. Yes, you see, it's only very recently for me to be allowed to read the news.
Yes, well, on television.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was previously said they were so emotional, you see, that when they came to something in this nursery business, they were broken into sobs.
Yes. Yes. Did you...
Help yourself, Paul Copy.
Oh, thank you very much. Are you sure you won't have any? I mean...
No, I won't. Thank you. Stick.
When you were handed over to Eva, did she sort of strike you as a woman with ideas who would change things and sort of had an idea of what morning
college
would be like?
I can't remember the actual handover. I don't think we ever discussed it much. I mean, I resigned. And I was told she'd been appointed. I suppose she came to talk to us, but I don't really remember very clearly.
It's a long time ago, anyway. I just wondered whether you got an impression of her personality at all.
No, she had a vivid personality. She was a keen suffragist, I know that, and had been active in that.
She was also active in that interesting movement, the Campaign for Democratic Education between the wars, trying to spread the ideas of how politics works and setting
us. Oh, yes, that, what's it called? There was the Lord Chandler's.
Yes, that's right, education
show, yes. Education, yes.
Citizenship,
I think.
Citizenship, that's right.
Lord Simon's. I knew very well.
Yes, well, she was a close friend of Simon.
Yes, she was.
But you don't remember your suffrage, your Napa days at all. It's all vanished.
I fear that Napa days tended to be occupied with personal matters.
But you don't remember the actual young suffragists or anything like that. That's very interesting. One can just forget them.
My actual political career didn't really begin, see, till I went to work for the Labour Party in 1926. No, I went to Morley in 27. No, I must have gone to the Labour Party in 22 or 3.
Yes, yes.
That was the period, yes.
When?
Then I was entirely eaten up with the Labour Party.
Yes.
I remember telling my aged uncle, no Labour member ever had too much to drink. Extremely naive.
So that really got you involved?
And got me involved in the backstage politics.
Yes.
And then I used to be asked to stand.
Did you really? For the Labour Party?
For Parliament, the Labour Party. I was asked scores of times, actually, but I always refused. And I refused because I worked for 4 years in Transport Paris, or which was then Eccleston Square. And during elections, we wrote the speaker's notes for the candidates. And in the evenings, we on the staff were sent out to the meetings to make little speeches to keep the place warm till the candidate came. And we stayed and listened to the candidate. When I heard what they did with our notes, I said, this game is not for me.
Yes, you mean they oversimplified what you'd said?
Yes, or misconstrued.
Yes.
They talked such trash.
Yes, yes.
I really couldn't make election speeches.
But in your father, I mean, you don't really self-consciously see yourself as a feminist at all. Do you think you are?
No. I mean, I feel very passionate every time I see pictures, as you do, of the meeting of this, that, and the other thing. CBI or some of the Brussels or Strasbourg organisations, and they represent almost entirely men. And in this house, I absolutely never refer to women. I do sometimes make inquiries as to how many of the majority sex there have been. This
yes.
I'm always rubbing in the fact that we are a majority.
Yes.
was still at 40. Yes, I found when I was in, I think I may have said this, perhaps I wasn't so indiscreet, when I was chairman of Juvenile Court, we used to have a lot of young women of 16 who were orphans in need of care because they were sleeping around.
Yes.
And I don't think of any reason why they shouldn't. I mean, as long as they were careful about consequences. I don't think it's irresponsible to create new lives. And the only thing I could think of was telling them that they were, men were surplus, and they needn't really rush around after the first one in case they didn't get one. At that time, men were in surplus till they were about 30, or surplus till you're 40 now.
Yes, well, that's worth knowing.
It's very important. It's your order to rush around and get one.
Yes, well, that's quite true. But were you ever asked to sort of join women's movements as such?
Yes, I've been asked frequently to join women's protests. Women's International League.
Oh, yes.
Because I went to Geneva. They were very decent. But I never made... I always refused to make protests on general topics. Qua woman. I mean, for instance, I was asked to join women's protests against the EEC before we went in, and I wouldn't do that. I would never do it as a woman. I would do it as a political person. So if I want to make protests, I make them through my political party or personally, if they're general topics.
Why do you think that, actually?
Because I don't think there is a woman's point of view on peace and freedom. And I don't think there is a woman's point of view on the EEC. I don't think women are. I think they should be treated by a very strong view. It would be awfully nice sometimes not to be a woman view first. I don't have to be a woman at home. I don't, but in public life and in professions, I don't want to be a woman peer, I don't want to be a woman doctor, I don't want to be a woman bus driver. I'm very happy to be a wife. I've said in this house that I think the differences are important in bed, totally unimportant.
Yes, that's very interesting. So, in a way, when you have separate women's organisations for various agitations and so on, that's sort of a halfway house to
Yes, but I think it's wrong.
Yes.
I don't think they should be for general objectives. Yes, I think they should be for women's objectives.
Yes.
When we are downtrodden, I think we should organise to get other members.
Yes. Yes.
When it is general questions, such as whether we should belong to the EEC or...
See, that's in a way, you're agreeing with what I was saying earlier, that in a way international relations and class issues distract people.
Yes, yes.
And in a way you would agree with
that. I would agree with that. They are the things that I would be interested in as a person. I would like to be associated with my political party. Or even an organisation, I mean, the left nuclear, what was it?
Nuclear Salt Sandy.
Yes, Sandy. I have left them because I think now there's no point in fighting nuclear after being used to fight war. War on them costs no great point in picking up nuclear capacity, so I said I wasn't going on. I mean, I did belong to the Social Security League, I think it's called. There was an organisation to promote the beverage report.
Oh, yes, did you really?
Oh, yes. I was active. I was chairman of that. That was an organisation which was solely designed to get the beverage report implemented. But you see, that wasn't a Quay war. That was an ad hoc pressure.
But I mean, aren't you always in a, or haven't you been always in a disadvantage in the sense that men tend to congregate in clubs, don't they, and to
yes.
discuss
yes.
politics in clubs, from which women on the whole have been excluded? I mean, has that actually been a hindrance to you very much?
I mean, no, I don't think so. You can make your own clubs, make your own circles, our women's clubs. Thank you.
Do turn me out.
I think I ought to ring once.
Right.
So get me.
By which? Yes.
William Talberg. I could never remember her name.
William Talberg is just quite, it is quite good, but it doesn't really tell you what it was like being a woman on the bedroom. It's rather
funny,
the politics.
It's funny how one took it for granted one's inferior status.
Yes. What do you mean when you were?
Yes, when I was an undergraduate.
How do you mean?
Oh, the fact that we were not allowed all these restrictions about having men in your rooms and that sort of thing, and that you sometimes the lectures. I'm sure.
Yes, I think you did. Yes, I think you did.
And it had to appear, lectures on the economic functions of government, such and such a time and place. Mr. H.D. Henderson, wee little footnote, Mr. Fulton, look at these lectures.
Yes, I remember it. It actually, you did mention that.
Yes. And somehow one took that very much for granted.
She didn't really have many impressions of what it was like being a woman undergraduate. I mean, it was all rather political.
No, she, after all, was a great deal later, wasn't she?
Yes.
It was all...
Yes.
I mean, she was allowed to mix socially in a way we weren't.
Mm. Yes, well, that's quite true. But one thing, I suppose, that really keeps you out of the women's movement is because you've got so many other causes.
Well, that is it.
You've got to specialise in something, yes. Haven't you?
I specialised in jolly little.
Now, if you're going to be anti-religion, I won't say euthanasia, but sort of unpopular causes.
Once or twice they had two with the capacity.
may have you for yourself, I'm sure, or not just because you're a woman. But
no, they always have to have a woman on the programme. Yes. That's the strategy.
Yes. Yes. One thing which I was very interested in Lady Stocks's, I don't know if you've read Lady Stocks's autobiography,
no, I
didn't. Complex book. It's very well worth reading, I think. Anyway, she said that really she found herself quite welcomed in the House of Lords. I mean, she didn't feel that she was a woman and being let in or anything at all. Do you find that yourself, Billy?
Yes, there was a slight tendency at first. When I first came, we were asked if we'd like to have a table reserved every day for the in the lunchroom, which I need hardly say was rejected with contumely. And the Lords have sort of good. I mean, we have far more representation on the front benches than our numbers entitle us to, proportionately. So that we've absolutely nothing to complain about. The only thing I would complain about is the faint air of patronage about a very good speech or too much applause.
You see, you're being tremendously helpful, because what I want to do when I'm writing about women, sort of about 1900 to 1940, I want to get out of the women's movement. I
mean, yes.
The history of women tends to be written in terms of the formal women's organisations, whereas you see, where you are helpful to me, and Dame Margaret Cole was very helpful
to
me,
sure.
Well, is in getting out of that world and looking at it from outside. And did you ever really feel, say in the 30s and 40s or so, that the women's movement was rather sectarian? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I mean that you didn't want to confine yourself to women's activities as such.
I didn't want to confine myself. I'd be quite happy to fight on occasion. I mean, I've always been, I think, rather a fighter for underdogs and injustices. And when we were underdogs and suffered injustices, I was prepared to fight to rectify them. But not to go beyond that. I mean, to fight for things that affected us as women, and not to organise us as women to fight for other things. Mm. That I think was wrong.
Yes, well, that's supposed to be.
That's an important distinction to me.
Yes, I quite agree. That's absolutely right. One interesting organisation which nobody's written about as historians yet is the Women's Institutes.
Yes.
And, I mean, it seems to me they're not self-consciously feminist particularly at all. They're just an organisation for people in a particular situation.
Yes.
And you knew, and you mentioned in your book,
Dame
Frances Parry. Could you tell me a bit about her? I wonder whether she's still alive, first of all, whether I could see her to talk about the Women's Institutes.
I've not heard her death. I think I should have done. She lived quite near me. I knew her because my aunt was governess to the Farrow family, Lord Farrow's children. I used to stay there sometimes, rather below the salt, because the governess was not quite the servants' hall, but was not quite the top. And Kitty Farrow married Lord Bridges, and Fanny Farrow never married, and became the Queen Bee of Women's Institutes. And I haven't seen any of them later life. She's quite a power in the neighbourhood. I mean, I think she was fairly tough about letting a house and that sort of thing. I hear of her as being quite a tough character in the neighbourhood. She lives in Abingdon, somewhere, Abingdon Hammer.
Does she really? I see. Yes.
Well, we despise. I live on Abingdon Common, which is where the savages go about in Woad.
Yes.
And they live down in Abingdon Hammer, which is suburbia. That's how mutual.
I see. What I do want to do when I write about women is to get out of the sort of feminist world and into some of these organisations, which seem to be really, really important. The Mothers Union's another.
Yes, that's another. Men can join that now. I don't quite know how they become mothers, but I suppose anything could happen.
And another one is, of course, the Towns Women's Guild.
Yes.
Which, again, nobody's ever written about at all.
And there's Norse Federation of Women's Whatnots, who sent me their stuff. Now, those I put in the WPB, you see.
That's right, yes, the Women's Professional Business Organisation, or Business and Professional Organisations.
Yes, it's not that one, it's another one.
Oh, WPB, I'm sorry, waste paper basket.
Yes.
Yes. But there are Business and Professional.
Yes, there are. I've just never connected with them, I don't think, but I have somehow spoken to them.
Because another problem about women is that you've had two world wars. wars which have focused everybody's attention on either winning the war or on international relations, and both those distract you.
Even at my age, we are owed 10 years of life.
How do you mean?
Two wars, which are dead loss. I mean, to me, they have an absolute dead loss that I created all useful, as far as I was concerned, and I feel that life owes me 10 years. Perhaps I guess it's, I've had more than my 3 score years in 10,
well,
but
yes,
half of it.
You've had a very good innings.
Yes, if I get the other half, it'll be all right. And I give my 18 months party. I believe a party that lasts 18 months. It will begin with my 80th birthday, and then it will, as this house would say, adjourn during pleasure. A lovely expression.
And
end up with my 20 years in this house. 80 months later, sorry. 80 months apart.
One thing before I go, because you've got to get your tray, have you really been very much influenced by your mother, do you think, in your career? I mean, it's a rather fatuous question generally, but have you self-consciously looked at your mother and in any sense modelled yourself on her, or tried to realise the opportunities she couldn't realise?
You must realise that from my very earliest youth I detested my mother. When I wrote that book, my brother said, "I never knew you disliked her so much." And my friend said, "I think you were very charitable."
I certainly didn't get this impression.
I absolutely. My earliest recollection, it's a sad thing to say, I know it, but my earliest recollection is tiptoeing past the door she was in, so as not to be called in. I detested my mother. And if I have modelled myself, I have modelled myself. I have said, "Look, you're getting like your mum."
So you've modelled yourself by reaction against.
I have modelled myself by reaction against. And I've tried not to get like her. I feel now, when I grew old, I could see that she was lonely and a sad old lonely woman, and that one could understand. But you see, she really was somebody who regarded her children projections of her personality, and anything you did reflected glory on her, which caused you to try not to do anything glorious. I am sure I told her my book, the wicked thing I did when I deliberately dodged my classics degree.
Yes, you mentioned that. Yes, yes.
Well, that was symptomatic of our relationship.
Yes, but it didn't lead you to be anti everything she was for, or did it? I mean,
practically.
I mean, insofar as you're a feminist, presumably.
No, I know. Upheld that, but I mean, I wouldn't ever have said it came from her. I would have said it came from me.
Yes.
Yes. But practically everything else, all her political views, all her social views.
Yes. Yes.
The way in which, when she discovered that the servants, or thought she discovered that the servants were smoking cigarettes, she said she would reduce their wages.
Because they had money to waste on this. You mean. Yes. 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 Because, the one thing that I have sort of talked to quite a lot of children of suffragettes and suffragists, and it's quite clear they have to fight to establish any personality of their own at all,
yes,
against their mothers.
Yes. I suppose we all have dominant mothers.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to generalise about that, but I mean, I do rather feel that there's a lot to be said for not having a suffragist or suffragette mother, I must say. I mean, you have to really establish your own independence in a rather self-conscious way.
Yes.
But still,
she did some generous things. I mean, she encouraged my first husband and myself to get married when he went to the front. Because, as she rightly said, if he was seriously wounded, I wouldn't be able to go to him, which I wouldn't if I was only his fiancé. And that was a generous-minded thing. One could find other motives, but
did you actually come together rather more than in later life? I mean, you said
no,
you understood.
I understood, and I tried to be humane. I mean, I used to go down and see her, but I never do that. I tried to be humane and to see her point of view.
Yes.
The sort of unreasoning, childish hatred disappeared. After all, she no longer had power over me.
Yes. That's rather awful, isn't it?
It's an awful thing to say.
But to tell you, you're very, very straightforward about it. I mean, I thought one of the great things about your autobiography was how honest it was about many things.
Right,
and I've always